You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com, bringing you the freshest radio in Brooklyn since 2009. Hear directly from chefs to farmers, artists to architects, authors to brewers, and everyone in between. Check out all of our shows on our website or by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. On behalf of everybody at HeritageRadioNetwork.com, we'd like to send a special thank you to the Hearst Ranch, our biggest supporter and longest-running sponsor since we first started in 2009. Hearst Ranch is the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. Since 1865, the Hearst family has raised cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of the Central California coast. The result is beef with extraordinary flavor that's as memorable and natural as the surrounding landscape. For more information, visit www.hearstranch.com.
Hello, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border, coast to coast, and all the ships at sea. Streaming live from the County of Kings, Brooklyn, New York City, on the Heritage Radio Network. Are you ready for the fastest half hour on the internet today? It's the Mike and Judy Show. Spanning the globe for high-minded hijinks and lowbrow kicks to bring you the best in sex, drugs, rock and roll, and nuclear fission. Too bad for radio and too good looking for television. And now, here they are, to pluck the low-hanging fruit of the literati, your hosts, Mike Edison and Judy McGuire.
All right, we're back.
Hello.
Hey, Judy, how's it going? I am lucky again today to be surrounded by astonishingly brilliant women. I'm Mike Edison. This is the Mike and Judy Show, but none more brilliant than my co-hostess with the mostest, the woman who is too hot for television, Judy McGuire.
Good afternoon, everyone.
And today, you know, this is a food network. The Heritage Radio Network is largely a food-based programming venue. And today we actually have a guest to talk about food, aside from all the punk rockers and perverts that we usually get on this show.
Fine. Well, actually, both our guests have food-related
Yeah, well, I imagine we'll be getting to the placenta smoothie before too long.
Placenta casserole.
Oy vey. But first, we have our first guest is Natalie Slater, our good friend from BaconDestroy.net, who is here to talk about Sugar Slam 2011. I'm glad to say that I'm one of the judges of this great wrestling-themed bake-off, along with WWE superstars CM Punk, the most controversial man in wrestling today, and the Glamazon Beth Phoenix. Hey, Natalie, you're there?
I'm here.
Awesome. Why don't you tell us what's going on with Sugar Slam 2011?
Well, things are wrapping up. Tomorrow's the last day I'm accepting entries, so I've been furiously working to try to get all of those loaded into a gallery for you celebrity judges to take a look at.
Oh my God! I looked at the gallery of entries, and they're mind-boggling.
I know. I'm so proud of everyone. There's 68 right now, and they're all bonkers.
Can you tell us a little bit about some of them? I mean, the Gorilla Monsoon banana cake to me seemed like
shoo-in
for someone for one big prize.
I know. She actually, the girl who made that, hand poured sugar lenses for his glasses.
Wow.
Yeah, it's out of control. But there's superstar Billy Graham cracker crusted tie dye pie.
That was
another
crazy
one.
Looking.
Tie dye pie.
One of my favorites.
And do you
there's
trip
so
if you
many.
Eat the tie dye pie?
The Lord would not approve.
No. Oh, yeah, so we've got George the Animal Steel Hairy Back Cupcakes. That's another appetizing entry.
Which was the bloody one with the folding chair?
Oh, the Ric Flair cupcake, I believe?
Yes.
Oh, right. Right. Of course, representing his blonde mane full of blood, as we've so often seen him.
It looks like something like a Rauschenberg construction.
Yeah, that was a little unappetizing.
So Natalie, why don't you tell us a little bit about Bacon Destroy and the rules of Sugar Slam so anybody can get in under the wire?
Okay, sure. Well, Bacon Destroy is a little project I started about 5 years ago. It's funny, it's actually a good sort of tie-in with the other guests you guys have today. It's when I first became a mom and therefore became incredibly boring and lame. I was stuck at home all the time, and I used to work in a bakery, so that's kind of what I would default to when I wasn't doing anything else. I would try to bake something new. So I started Bake and Destroy as a way to kind of keep in touch with the people who didn't care what was going on with my baby, which is everyone, pretty much. And And so since then, it's just been a place where I post new recipes and interview different pastry chefs and do fun stuff like Sugar Slam. So Sugar Slam, I started in 2008, kind of just fooling around and talking with CM Punk about different desserts. He hates frosting, so this is a fight that we've had going on for.
Who hates frosting?
Yeah, right?
That's
crazy. Well, CM Punk, for those of you who don't know, former World Wrestling Federation, World Wrestling Enterprises champion, is the most controversial man in wrestling today. I can't believe how lucky you are to have him as a judge in this contest. And you guys have been friends for a long time, right?
We've been friends for a long time, yeah. And for every birthday I ever baked for him, all he ever wanted was an angel food cake with fruit.
Now it needs to be said that he's a straight edge wrestler, CM Punk. Yes. For those who aren't tuned in, no drinking, no smoking, no drug taking for
and no frosting,
CM Punk.
And
no frosting either. I know. So I think we were just kind of maybe making some threats to each other about, you know, like, I can't believe you don't like frosting. I should, like, clothesline you. And that's where Sugar Slam kind of came from. So the first one was just kind of spur of the moment. I didn't really give people much time, and I got a good handful of funny entries. And, of course, being a heel, Punk chose the entry dedicated to him. So our winner made a Pepsi cupcake and with no frosting. I kind of let it go for a couple years, but I've just been getting so many requests, especially, you know, lately with Punk kind of stirring up more and more and more dirt in the WWE, that this seemed like a good time to do it.
Now, for those of you who have not been following WWE Raw, CM Punk, his last week working for the company is going to be next week,
right?
But he's threatening to win the championship match that he has scheduled the day before he leaves, is that right?
Or that's right.
I guess before TV, and take the belt with him.
Yes.
He's a hero to all of us here at the Mike and Judy Show, Heritage Radio. That's right, Judy, he is. Okay, get on board or get run over. Hey, Natalie, stick around. We're going to talk to our friend B, the mysterious woman from Shut the Fuck Up Parents, and I think you should stick around and talk to us a little bit about mommies who overshare.
Oh, boy.
Judy, why don't you tell us a little about this mysterious woman who's sitting here in the studio with us?
B is the founder and writer at Shut the Fuck... Well, it's STFUParentsBlog.com. Shut the Fuck Up Parents, blog. Somebody's squatting ShutTheFuckUpParents.com, so hopefully they'll give it up in a little while.
Fuck those internet squatters.
Yeah, fuck them. Shut the Fuck Up Parents is a submission-based public service blog that mocks parental overshare on social networking sites. Like, you know, your friends who photograph their children's poops and put it up as their Facebook status update, or talk about the enema they had during labor, or the episiotomy, or the placenta, you know, the placenta casserole they made afterwards. Anyway, she is the author and creator of this blog. She's a 29-year-old lady who lives in Brooklyn with her boyfriend and no children. Just two little cats named Agnes and Duke. She doesn't have kids, but she actually does hope to one day, although I think after another year of doing this blog, she won't. She also writes Mommy-ish. She writes a column for Mommy-ish, the blog Mommy-ish, and is a contributor to Hairpin. And she has also contributed a really valuable word to the English language called mommy-jacking. Bea, do you want to explain what mommy-jacking is?
Mommy-jacking is when you... Oh, pardon me. Mm-hmm. Mommy-jacking is when someone hijacks your status update. So if you say something... It could be completely unrelated, or it could be tangentially related. So if you say something like, you know, I'm having the best corn soup right now, then someone will say, oh my God, you should have seen my kid's diaper after I fed him corn yesterday, or something like that. And I found that it's the most popular category on the site because so many people get mommy jacked all the time.
And it's so shocking. Like, I remember one entry was something like, you know, a year ago today, my best friend died. And
yeah.
What did the mommy say, the mommy jack say? Like,
I can't even remember. There have been several of those, though, that are just super morbid.
It's it's unconscionable. My favorite one of the mommy jacking was someone offering blessings to veterans who had stormed the beach at Normandy.
Yeah.
And it got mommy jacked. It's like, you should have seen my boy at the beach yesterday.
Right. Same
yeah.
thing.
Okay, yeah, so the question is, what the fuck is wrong with these people?
It's hard to say. Some people, I think, were born this way. You know, like, maybe they didn't necessarily always overshare, but they were always interested in talking about things that nobody really cared about for a long time, and then they had kids and they just decided that everyone needed to know everything about their kids. Other people, I think, that they have kids and they didn't realize until they had kids the joy and the miracle and all of that, and so they just get completely overwhelmed and they start sharing everything.
Natalie, I think you mentioned you learned quickly to keep this impulse in check. How did you know not to just share 24/7 about your little dumpling? Natalie? Okay. I guess she's not here. Okay.
But that was nice of her to say that, though. It sounded good.
Natalie's got an adorable little boy, and she does share, but all I see is pictures of him rocking out and having fun.
Yeah, it sounds like she keeps him in check.
Yeah, well, it doesn't seem like she's splattering it all over Facebook.
Right.
Where I need to be, like, reading his fecal matter as if they were tea leaves.
Right, and, like, do you really need to share with your friends that you had to reach up your son's rectum to help him poop?
With your pinky, and then add the words, let the poop flow.
this is just yuck. You know, I mean, what is instinct of oversharing? I mean, it's like toxic narcissism is what I call it.
Well, that's a very good term, yeah. I'm going to have to start using that.
It's like period updates to the nth degree, you know? Like,
man.
The labor photographs.
Horrible. Absolutely horrible.
I mean, yeah, what's the old school equivalent of this, I guess, is maybe someone who, like, that old gag where someone opened up their wall and all the pictures would come tumbling out. But still.
It's much worse than that, though. It's like, take those pictures and then pretend that they're all of diarrhea, you know? Instead of, like, a school picture, it's a picture of, you know, your kid with a snot bubble.
Do you feel like your gag reflex has gotten stronger or weaker since you started?
Honestly, I have recently had to stop eating while going through submissions because it's getting worse.
Yeah, I've had to stop eating while reading the blogs. Well, not so much reading the blog as looking at the pictures.
Yeah.
And what is up with the dads who always seem to be posting pictures of their children's giant balls?
Dads love to talk about their kids' giant balls. They absolutely love it. There's one guy who posted a picture and he added the caption, his mother says it looks like a butterfly. And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? You know, it's just, I don't understand.
Natalie, you're back on the line, right?
I was saying
the other day, I said something on Twitter about how I think if there's a summer trend right now, it's got to be baby boy erections.
Natalie, okay. Tell me you never did that to your son. You never
I would never. I mean, just for the simple fact that there's too many weirdos out there.
Yeah, really?
I would never. Those are things that we laugh about in private.
Of course. And every parent does. You know, every parent talks about those things and the color of their kids' poop, but that's just because you do that at home.
Yeah.
I mean, I think my parents had one or two naked bathtub pictures of all of us, of each of us. And if they were put on the internet, I think I would have killed myself. at age 12, discovering those when you're embarrassed about everything or should be.
So, Natalie, honestly, never guilty of oversharing?
Oh, I know. I was actually looking through this site kind of panicked. I know I'm on here. I know I'm on here. But, I mean, you know, sometimes I don't have anything else going on. I mean, they really do just make you lame. So...
I don't think that's true. You have a lot going on.
You sound very cool.
You know, I know better because I see those things. I have lots of mommy friends, and I know what people don't want to hear about, so I try to keep it to myself.
As you're a baker and a cook, when you did have your child, how did you dispose of your placenta? Did you look
at
it?
We were so bad in the labor room. Like, my husband wouldn't look at anything or touch anything. He was shoved up against the wall the whole time, and I wouldn't look, and I just was like, just get it out, clean it off, please, just do what you need to do. I just want to go back to what I was doing before this happened.
So there was no, like, cupcakes?
No, good
no,
Lord.
No, no, no,
no. No red velvet.
Oh, God.
Judy is just dying to turn this conversation over to the placenta smoothie, but I'll tell you what, before we...
I cannot get over that people eat their placenta.
Okay, hold that thought, you guys, and your red velvet cake, and while the boy here, who thought he was made of some pretty stern stuff, moans and groans and goes to get a nice stiff drink, let's take a quick break. Jack, you got some music for us today, especially for Shut the Fuck Up Parents.
Beat on the brat with a baseball bat. Oh yeah, oh yeah, oh ho. Beat on the brat, beat on the brat with a baseball bat. Oh yeah, oh yeah, oh ho. Oh yeah, oh yeah, oh ho. Beat on the brat with a baseball bat. Oh yeah, oh yeah, oh ho.
All right, we're back here at the Mike and Judy show. Mike Edison with my co-host, Judy McGuire, and we're here in the studio here in Bushwick, Brooklyn, New York City, behind Roberto's on the Heritage Radio Network with the indefatigable B, the woman only known as B, who's responsible for the website Shut the Fuck Up Parents. And also joining us live from Chicago, Illinois, is Natalie Slater of BaconDestroy.net, also a happy mommy. And speaking of baking and destroying and cooking, we left it off. You were talking about your favorite recipe for the placenta smoothie.
Well, my Pilates instructor who lives in Thailand and will hopefully never hear this, put her, I thought like I would never have anything to contribute to Shut the Fuck Up Parents because most of my parent friends are normal. And she's normal. She's a lovely woman. But one day after her child was born, she put this picture up of this delicious looking mango something smoothie. And I looked closer and it was made from her placenta. And I was really grossed out, but I was also so happy to have something to contribute.
The second it came my way, I was like, this is going up tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a beautifully shot photograph.
Really gorgeous. And what I was saying earlier to Judy that makes that placenta smoothie so special is that all the ingredients are like, you know, some green and there was nothing at all that was orange or red about the ingredients. And then the smoothie itself was bright orange, which basically...
Natalie, you're vegan, right?
I'm vegetarian, but this is still repulsive.
Oh, okay.
This girl is a vegan. Doesn't this sort of make you not a vegan if you're eating meat from your own body?
I guess maybe... Kind of borderline cannibalism, I think.
I haven't read the bylaws.
That's what people say on the blog. It's a weird issue because a lot of the mothers who do that, which is supposed to offset postpartum, and some people dry it and encapsulate it and everything. But a lot of those women are very
crunchy.
You know, yeah, like alternative lifestyle, and they don't eat meat and whatnot. And so it's interesting to me.
What are some of the other things that people have made out of placenta?
There was a submission.
What is this obsession?
I'm obsessed with it. People are eating organ from their body. It's like eating, like making tampon tea. Disgusting.
Tampon tea. People eat all sorts of weird things. Tampon tea, really?
There was a post one time that I put up that was a woman who was kind of like, what do I want to make with my placenta? I've already made pizza, sushi rolls, eaten it raw, and she listed this whole list of things.
And what are the health benefits of this? I mean...
It's not really a health benefit.
And do you need to be dancing in, like, the flight of the full moon when you eat the placenta? Is that...
That could help.
This all sounds like some, like, Wiccan cult or something. No offense to the Wiccans in the audience.
I just did a quick Etsy peek, and you can definitely get DIY placenta encapsulation kits.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, so
you can also get placenta prints.
You freezer dry it, I think, right? You freeze dry it or whatever. You do something, like, you put it in the oven.
At least that, like, you don't taste the texture, and, like, it's just in a gelatin capsule. You can even make a suppository.
I'll tell you what I find is the most offensive thing about I see on Shut the Fuck Up Parents, and that's the nanny culture, the extension of the nanny culture, these precious kids, and protecting them, and, you know, and putting them in this bubble where they can, no dirt, no harm, no grime, no crime. Now, look, when we grew up, all right, I used to drive in the car. I didn't wear a seatbelt till I was like 18 years old.
Right.
Okay, driving around with my mother, who would smoke at me, you know, in front of like a sharp metal dashboard. And you know, I turned out okay for the most part. If you,
well, you know, yeah, my mom smoked, drank, beat the crap out of me. But like one of the more offensive posts you've run recently is that note that the new parents sent out to all of their alleged friends.
A lot of people were into that. That was crazy. It was basically like, at the top, she wrote, as on her Facebook note, she said, this is a note just so everybody doesn't get hit, like, so it's not a surprise later, or something like that.
Just giving you the heads up.
Yeah,
this was the invite, non-invite.
Yeah.
To come to my house, look at my baby, and then do my dishes.
Yes, it was like, if you want to come over, you're welcome to come over if you give us, you know, like 40 days notice, and then you come over in a plastic, you know, hazmat suit, and then you do our dishes for us, and you basically wave at the baby from across the room, and don't smoke, and make sure you cover yourself in sanitizer, and, you know, it was just ridiculous.
Like, you can't even have smoked in your life if you wanted to come in their house.
It was really, it was rude, honestly. I mean, it was crazy, but it was also just plain rude.
And yeah, I would have bought that kid like a carton of Pall Malls for his birthday.
Yeah, like what is the proper age to teach a child to smoke?
Exactly.
I had my first beer at my first communion.
Well, actually, my father took a picture of me with a bottle of beer on my first birthday. And it's, you
babies
know,
love bottles of beer.
Babies love bottles of beer. Maybe, you know, and these kind of habits
natural
die hard, apparently. I think that was the beginning of the end for my mother and my father right there. You pretty much trace it right back to that bottle of beer on my first birthday.
Well, but, so, speaking about eating and babies and not placenta, another thing that's really been a hot point is the idea of the babies in restaurants or bars.
Yes. Well, and that takes so many different directions, because first there's the, should a baby be in a, you know, fancy restaurant, or should the baby be in the bar at all?
And the answer is no.
Right. Well, and then there takes it many steps further, where some people say, you know, so what? My baby, you know, pooped. What am I supposed to do? Let him sit in it? And
the
so
they changing on the table.
Yes, which you told me you have seen before.
I saw that recently at Five Leaves Restaurant in Greenpoint, Heath Ledger's place.
Very small tables, close together.
Yes, we were outside, but I really did not need to see you change your baby's diaper at the table right next to me and then carry your naked baby past my table into the bathroom. Like, can't you just...
And one woman said that she accidentally somehow put a diaper on her baby backwards, and while they were in the restaurant, a piece of poop fell through the diaper, through the pant leg, onto the floor, and then she adds at the end, thankfully nobody noticed and we got the hell out of there.
So she just left the poop.
She left a turd on the floor.
Surprise! Here's your tip.
I'm feeling a lot better.
Are you feeling like Mother of the Year now?
I'm actually feeling pretty cool right now.
Alright, I just want to say that, I'm going to say it now, I hate children with food allergies.
Well, they're not as bad as adults with food allergies.
Okay, oh, true. True that. But I want to know, when did kids become allergic to bread? Okay, when I was growing up, you were allergic to bread, you'd have the shit beaten out of
you. That's a question for Natalie, I think. Natalie, do you know much about that?
Yeah, I've been actually really curious about that, too, because I had never heard of these... you know, gluten allergies, and never known so many kids with peanut allergies in my life.
Yeah, you can't even bring peanut butter into schools anymore.
Yeah, it's a hugely, you know, it's a big issue.
Or guns.
Same thing.
Fucked up society. But, yeah, Natalie, you do a lot of gluten-free cooking, right? And I noticed Judy was sort of rolling her eyes at one of the Bacon Destroy Sugar Slam entries, the vegan Roddy Piper cupcakes.
That seems anti, you know...
Anti-wrestling.
Well, now I know there's a wrestler who doesn't like frosting, so my all my illusions
anything
about wrestling.
Happen.
Okay. Frosting is gay.
Frosting is delicious.
That's all it is. It's just delicious.
Most baked goods are just a vehicle for the frosting.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Totally agree. Everything should have, cookies should have frosting. Yeah. Everything should have frosting.
Yes.
Meat should have frosting on it.
I love it. Guacamole is nature's frosting. I love that.
I thought that was the placenta.
You really want to get back on the placenta. Do we need to talk about episiotomies now, Mike?
I'm wondering what the fuck that is.
It's when they cut open the woman's vulva to get that big head through.
And it's
painful. Then they stitch it up.
Okay.
And somebody, you know, like a hired birth photographer takes a nice picture of it, and then they...
Oh, the hired birth photographer. Available for bar mitzvahs, weddings, and the crowning of your first child.
Yes.
It's like that show on Bravo, the maternity nanny person...
I've
maternity
heard of it.
Concierge.
Yeah. Oh, right. The pregnant in heels.
Yes, Rosie Pope.
Mm-hmm.
She will arrange for a makeup artist to be at your labor and delivery, so your photos won't come out looking, you know, crappy, like you've just pushed a bus through a pencil, a hole the size of a pencil lead.
Yeah, and who doesn't deserve to be pampered and and given a pedicure while in the delivery room?
Awaiting their push present.
So what are some of the other things that are trending on Shut the Fuck Up Parents right now?
Yesterday I posted something about birthdays. Apparently, I understand, you know, that invitations are kind of... We're in this digital world now, so you might not want to send a paper invitation to your friends, but now a lot of parents are kind of taking that as an opportunity to post an invitation that's like, all 5,000 of my friends, you're welcome to come to this party. We're going to provide water, and we're going to provide, you know, like slices of watermelon, and then you can bring... And then they list a gift registry for their one-year-old.
Who registers... I mean, when you get married, you register for gifts. Like,
I saw this post. It almost incited me to violence. There's no question. I was going to go over to that person's house and beat the living crap out of them.
The one woman actually called it his wish list, and I was like...
Kids don't wish for workbenches. Okay, one-year-olds don't sit around thinking about workbenches, barbecue stations, right. Lawn chairs...
One-year-olds can't talk, can they?
You know,
no, not usually.
You know, just put a little rum in the fucker's milk and let it go.
Well, or just invite your friends over and have a couple beers and don't even mention presents, and they'll probably just bring one. You know?
But it might not be the right present.
Exactly, and that's
right.
That's where
you
the whole thing comes in.
Control over it.
Exactly.
Okay, I have a little game for you, Natalie and B. Just a couple of questions about, you know, bad moments in parenting.
Okay.
Who do you feel is the scarier mom, Courtney Love or Octomom?
Does Octomom have 8 arms like the guy in the Spider-Man movie?
She has 30
movie?
Children under the age of 9.
Yeah, I keep seeing this Octomom thing, and I haven't really connected with it. She has 8 children, I'm guessing, or 8
no,
bombs?
She had 8 children at one time. She had other children.
She already had, what, 3 or 4?
How do
right.
I not?
Yeah.
I'm going to say Octomom. I mean, Courtney Love only has 1 to screw up.
It's true.
Right.
That's a good point. That might be the only point for me that differentiates them, because Courtney Love has that whole, like, crazy mom thing where one minute she's like, I hate you, and the next minute she's like, please come back to me. And so that's a little freaky. That's a little damaging.
Most inappropriate dad. Michael Lohan, who's Lindsay's dad and is on this season of Celebrity Rehab, or Joe Simpson, Jessica's dad, who once said about her, Jessica never tries to be sexy, she just is sexy. If you put her in a t-shirt or you put her in a bustier, she's sexy in both. She's got those double D's. Can't cover those suckers up. So, like, Lindsay's dad, who's driven her to drugs and drinking and stealing ugly jewelry, or Joe?
Blame it on dad. Always blame it on dad.
It's always the father.
Blame it on the father.
That's a tough one, because I hate both of them so much.
Yeah, I was going to say, I would vote to kill either.
And
so.
Here I was going to say, they're both doing such a good job, it's really hard to discern. I think it's an unfair
question. They'll probably end up having a radio show together.
They probably will.
This is the postmodern world.
Okay, worst child, Veruca Salt from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory or Christine Penmark from The Bad Seed?
Ooh.
I'm going to go Veruca.
Yeah, she...
Because The Bad Seed, at least she was creative, you know? She was killing people, but she was very creative about it and stealth for a while until she got caught.
Now, I guess the next question is, of the Willy Wonka children, was any one of them worse than any of the others, or are they all equally bad?
She's the worst. Veruca Salt.
You think she's worse than, like, Mike TV?
Just
or the little fat German boy whose name escapes me?
I kind of like the little fat German boy.
He grew up to become Goldfinger, right? I like the German. What about him do you like? Augustus Grump, is that his name?
Yeah.
I like that he's fat.
Yeah, I like that he's fat, and he reminded me of a kid I went to kindergarten with who's the my only memory of him was that he was German, fat, and one day he fell off his chair and farted really loudly as he hit the ground. And, like, how many years later, I remember that. It's clear as a bell.
That's awesome.
Do you reenact that at home sometimes?
Spiro does. I'll push him off the chair.
You got one more for us, Judy? Or is that the end of the...
I'm going to go home and reenact that tonight.
That's it? Okay. Well, which parents are worse? My parents are a pack of wolves.
Your parents.
You know what?
This week, your parents win.
Yeah. I got to be careful. I mean, it's a nice Jewish tradition to use your parents as material in your comedy routine. But I swear to God,
they give you rich material.
With this shit on the internet, it's going to come and bite me in the ass one day. I'm sure of it. All right. Once again, it's been the Mike and Judy Show. I'm Mike Edison with Judy McGuire, the co-hostess with the mostest, and our guest B from Shut the Fuck Up Parents. That's STFU.
ParentsBlog.com.
And the great Natalie Slater from Chicago, BakeAndDestroy.net. Please visit her and get your Sugar Slam entries in now. We'll see you guys next week. We got a special show about New York City. Thank you guys so much.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
Legendary Mad Dog Tosto.
Photo Booth by Ryan Slack.
Waterworld.
Closed by Chimera Dactyl.
Mary Meyer.
Warren Bogart.
Death Killer. Asphalt Resistant Jeans.
All types of food for your face.
Sweet Soda by P&A.
Roberta's Bake Sale.
Heritage Food USA.
Orange Chaney Eating Contest
by the Orange Chaney Brothers.
Live music by Alex Trujan,
Florida,
Paper Twin,
Dang Sign,
The Netherlands,
Team Robespierre,
Wild Yak,
MC Todd and Bo Breezy,
Night Show,
yeah.
Sponsored by Martin Greenfield Clothers,
Free Fitness Studios,
Heritage Radio Network,
Free Williamsburg,
6 Point Beer,
Momo's,
Sushi Shack,
Beer Box USA,
Planet of the Bates,
Bushwick Block Party, it's a party in the street,
all day long.
It's with great sadness that we mourn the loss of Ray Dieter, owner of the DBA Bars and co-host of Beer Sessions Radio. Ray made this studio brighter every Tuesday at 5 p.m. with his larger-than-life personality, charm, wit, charisma, and expertise. We hope the archives of Ray on our station will serve as some kind of window into the life of a man who meant so much to those he knew and those he didn't know. And on behalf of everybody here at Heritage Radio Network, we thank you, Ray.
And they've been doing that for many, many years. And how did I get that barrel of beer? Did you ever hear of a place called Beer Mountain?
I have not, actually.
Beer Mountain is a place that I climb every once in a while to find barrels of beer for my customers. I go up there. I wear big, heavy boots. I carry a sled with me because there's snow and ice. And I go to the top of the mountain, and I bring back barrels and bottles of beer for the people at my bars. And that's where I got it from, Beer Mountain.
You're awesome, Ray.
It's better for growing things. There's just more rain and more regular temperatures, not as harsh a winter.
Sure.
So it just became more economically viable to grow it there.
Can I just make a statement? I want to apologize to everybody that asked me why hops weren't grown in New York State, because I've told everybody there is a hop blight. I just pulled that out of my ass.
So why did you open a bar in New Orleans?
Well, everybody asks that question. The basic reason I opened a bar in New Orleans, down there, obviously it's a drinking town. There's a lot of drinking town. It's also a culinary town. They have some of the best restaurants in the country down there, and people told us we were crazy bringing a good beer, good whiskey, good drinking concept down to New Orleans, because all the people wanted was, you know, huge ass buds. And that's all well and fine, and there's a lot of fun to be had on Bourbon Street, but there's a lot of shit going on down there away from Bourbon Street. And we opened up DBA in 2000, and we had a slow beginning because we had a pretty good list and people were like kind of intimidated. But once the restaurant people, the chefs, the service people in the restaurant industry kind of got wind that we were down there and we had a great beer selection, we got filled up pretty fast. I mean, it worked out real well. And we opened our second place called Mimi's down there. And another aspect about it is down there, you know, a bar owner is a respected member of the community. We pay our taxes, we employ people, and we're part of the whole trade industry down there, the whole tourist industry. In New York City, we're not treated quite the same, and you know that as well as I speak. We're kind of treated as we're not a respected member of the business community as bar owners, necessarily.
So you like New Orleans?
I love New Orleans.
Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio. Ray Dieter, a.k.a. Bootsy Collins, was just on the air. Ray, what was it like in the old days? Did you have a band or something? Bootsy Collins, Ray Dieter, DBA.
I play guitar a little bit, but yeah, it was kind of boring. The beer business is a lot more fun, Jimmy.
You're just too cool, man. I love you, man. Ray, tell us the Tom Peters story. I know you've known him for years.
Yeah, you know, I have known him for years, and all the stories that I have about Tom, I cannot tell you on the radio.
How about a general beer theme story, like
okay,
the first time you met him? How about that?
Okay, the first time I met Tom, he was running a bar in Philadelphia called
Copa 2,
right. And he was, I went down there, DBA was a brand new bar. We went down there, and he was one of the most generous, wonderful guys. He's like, oh, DBA, I love you guys. Like, how did he hear about us? I have no idea. But he knew who we were, and he treated us like kings. And free food, free drinks. So generous. And then I found out that he didn't own the place. So it's like, oh, that makes a lot of sense now.
If anyone's offering a course like that, it's a scam.
It's absolutely. I took a course at NYU about opening a bar, and it was just a fallacy. It was just ridiculous. They have no idea. It's all about math, too. And the math they talk about is really fun, but it's really not pertinent to what you do on a day-to-day living. We need beer. Can somebody open some beer?
Right, I'm all over this. Give me a minute. Give me a
My
bottle.
My glass is empty.
This is the first show. We haven't been drinking beer nonstop.
Right.
Hey, Ray, how are you? How was your weekend?
You know, my New Year's was fine. I made a few bad choices, but you're supposed to. That's just what it is. New Year's is about making bad decisions. And I did that. But all in all, okay. I lived through it.
Like I say, we're the only brewery in the world. We have wooden oak casks. So
When are we going to get some keys?
That's the reason. I mean, these casks, we sell them in England. You can't ship these things across the Atlantic Ocean.
How about if provide the casks?
Even if we do provide the
casks. When I say we, I mean by America.
Well,
and by America, I mean Union. Union beer.
Cask beer done the traditional way as we do it has a shelf life of probably about a week after it after it's brewed.
Yeah, but we have some casks coming over here. I know the Shelton Brothers bring some casks, and I know that the United Nether Importer brings some casks.
I mean, that's fantastic.
And they're
fine. I'm really glad that you appreciate it. You know, that's great for you that you have English cask beer. But I mean, to be brutally honest, the way that we do things at Sam Smith's is that we are very, very traditional, and that's what we believe our success is based on, is sticking to what
we do best.
But
IPA was made to be sent to India, and that's before airplanes and big steamships. I mean, if you really want to be traditional, you can, like, you know, we can get a donkey cart to come around south of Africa or whatever on a tramp steamer and bring it over. But I think it's time for Samuel Smith's to be available in cask occasionally for special events in New York. A lot of the beers in England, I mean, most of the breweries, the old school English ale breweries, would make a barley wine, but it wasn't, they weren't proud of them. It was something that they kept under the shelf, and it was something that, like, the old guy with a really greasy red woolly cap in the corner would get a little glass, and it was like, he would get a little bottle of it, it was about 6 ounces, and he'd pour it into his ale.
Yeah.
Because nobody would sit there and pound barley wine like we do here in America.
Right. Yeah.
And that barley wine that he was pouring into his ale.
It was fortification, yeah.
Right. His ale was about 3.5%. It was a session beer. And the barley wine back in the day was probably about 6%, 6.5%.
Right, right.
And he didn't want to be seen drinking that because only old drunks drank barley wine. But that's a whole old profile.
Little nip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now, so he would do, he would dip that little glass into his ale, and he would drink that. He'd sip that and quietly have a nice day.
Can't wait to be old.